see that we were going to divide the session into three. We'd go through insurance, then the interrelationship with IFRS 9 and IFRS 4, and then do the project update.
So good morning. I'll be doing the verbal update on the decisions reached by the board for the main insurance project only. The board made significant progress on discussing the disaggregation of changes in market variables between profit and loss and OCI. As a reminder, insurance contracts are of course measured using current assumptions, and the effects of changes in market variables are recognized in the statement of comprehensive income. The discussion and decisions are only about presentation, and in particular, how and when to disaggregate the changes in the liability arising from those changes in market variables between profit and loss and OCI. The ISB had finished discussions previously on accounting without participation features, and the purpose of this meeting was to take decisions on accounting for contracts with participation features on that subject matter. Contracts with participation features are contracts with additional features that allow the policyholders to share in some of the risk and rewards. They are additional payments that are paid to the policyholder that arise differently to the payments that are commensurate to the insurance loss. The boards have previously discussed different variations of the effective yield approach, and another term that has been discussed was the current period book yield approach. In terms of the decisions, the board discussed that in the forthcoming standards for the board decided that the ISB should not describe or prescribe detailed mechanics, but instead specify that the objective when disaggregating those changes between profit and loss and OCI is that the insurance investment expense or the interest expense and profit and loss should be done on a cost measurement basis. Not specifying detailed mechanics would avoid complex requirements that would be needed to be tailored for the various contracts with participation features all around the world. The board made further decisions. An inherent feature of a cost measurement basis, even a cost measurement basis that is presentation only in profit and loss, is that accounting mismatches may arise between the items held. Accordingly, the ISB decided two issues to address that. Firstly, to extend the accounting policy option to present a current measurement basis in profit and loss to all contracts that would be accounted for under the insurance forthcoming insurance standards. So that would include all contracts with participation features as well. And secondly, to modify that objective when there is no economic mismatches arising. When there are no economic mismatches arising, it is relatively simple to address accounting mismatches and profit and loss. In these circumstances, the board decided that the objective for this limited subset of contracts is to eliminate accounting mismatches and profit and loss with the items held. So it's a different objective. And that approach that would fulfill that objective is the current period book year. The limited subset of contracts would be contracts that apply the variable fee approach but also have items that are held that relate to the obligation promised in the contracts accounted for under the variable fee approach. The second thing that the board discussed was mitigating risk. And the board discussed the situation when an entity economically minimizes risk by, first of all, they have an insurance contract which is accounted for under the variable fee approach with embedded guarantees. The entity then purchases a derivative that minimizes the financial market risk arising from that embedded guarantees. However, under if the board did not make further decisions, the accounting may not have portrayed the economic offset that occurs. This is because under the variable fee approach, changes in the value of the embedded guarantee are recognized in the contractual service margin, whereas changes in the value of the standalone derivative are measured at fair value immediately in profit and loss. The ISB decided that to allow an entity to recognize changes in the value of the embedded guarantee in the insurance liability in profit and loss, That change is measured using fulfillment cash flows and subject to specified conditions to ensure that an economic offset exists.
Questions? It's all very simple stuff. This.
Absolutely.
Okay, shall we talk about something that people understand then?
Okay, so the other stream of work on relating to insurance contracts that the board considered was to do with our response to the concerns we've heard about the different effective dates of IFRS 9 and the new insurance contract standard. So I'm sure most of you are aware of this, but IFRS 9 has an effective date, the mandatory effective date, beginning for periods beginning on or after 1st of January 2018. The timing of the insurance contracts project means that it's unlikely that the insurance contract standards will have a mandatory effective date before the beginning of annual periods beginning on or after 1st January 2020, if not later. And so we've heard some concerns, particularly from preparers, about the effect of this different effective dates on companies that are predominantly affected by the new insurance contract standard. So back in July, the board already made some decisions about how it could address some of the accounting consequences using what we called an overlay approach, which would require that entities apply IFRS 9 but are permitted to make an adjustment which would take out the temporary additional accounting mismatches and additional volatility that people were worried about. And so at this meeting, we discussed this overlay approach in more detail. We confirmed some of the details around which assets would be eligible for the overlay approach, some of the transition requirements and presentation and disclosures, and confirmed that that would be proposed in an exposure draft. We also discussed another approach, which we've called the deferral approach, and we actually discussed two forms of this in the board meeting. The difficulty the board faced was striking a balance, really, between providing a deferral for assets that relate to insurance activities, if that was felt justified, versus making sure that all non-insurance activities, the assets relating to the non-insurance activities, were accounted for under IFRS 9, because IFRS 9 is the most appropriate accounting standard for all financial instruments. And in striking this balance, the board considered two approaches, one which I would describe as being simpler, but would therefore apply to a narrower scope because you have a bigger risk of sweeping in non-insurance assets, and the other which was more complex and had more complex provisions around applying it at a lower level, below the reporting entity level, so you could have some assets that were under IAS 39 and some that were under IFRS 9 in the same set of financial statements. And in the end, the board decided that if they were going to have a deferral approach, it should be the simpler one that's easier to understand, easier to do, easier for users to understand as well. Then the board debated whether or not there should be a deferral approach, and I'm sure some of you are also aware that it was a very difficult discussion for the board. It was very closely drawn and that there were strong views on both sides. But in the end, the board, with the help of a casting vote, decided that they would propose to have a deferral approach in the exposure draft. And I think it's fair to say that in the discussion subsequent to that meeting, when board members were asked who would dissent to the exposure draft, many referred to the difficulty of that split vote and thought that the best approach would be for us to get information through an exposure draft to help inform our decision making, because we were in such a, we could see both sides of that debate. So what we have now is we're in process of drafting an exposure draft of amendments that would propose both an overlay approach and a deferral approach. The overlay approach means that entities apply IFRS 9. All entities who have insurance contracts could make this overlay adjustment. The deferral approach means that a very limited number of entities whose predominant activities relates to issuing contracts within the scope of IFRS 4 would be allowed to defer IFRS 9 with associated disclosures, and that we would publish that as an exposure draft as soon as we can, and we would also be seeking a shortened comment period in view of the urgency and narrowness of this issue. We have already posted our board paper, I think, setting out the staff's view on the appropriate comment letter period. Our standard comment period is 120 days. We need again to strike another balance. The balance is between making sure we get good input from those who want to comment on this, and that's not just those who want a overlay or deferral approach, but particularly from those who think it's not necessary and who think that perhaps some of these changes might be to the detriment of financial reporting generally. And against that, we also need to make sure that whatever we do finalise comes into place in time for the beginning of January 2018, when entities would otherwise need to be applying IFRS 9. So our recommendation is 60 days, because it's less than the 120 days we are seeking permission from the Due Process Oversight Committee, and we will feed what the Due Process Oversight Committee have to say on that to the board when we get have that discussion. And so that may well be more than 60 days if they didn't think our recommendation was appropriate.
Comments, questions? Thank you.
Thank you for your helpful explanation. Let me first appreciate the ISC's tremendous dedication to put into the project on insurance contract standard. As for the tentative decision last week, we understand the ISC decided to public exposure draft to defer the effective date of IFRS 9, considering the potential accounting mismatches between financial asset and insurance contract liabilities. We have not sufficient discussions in Japan about the tentative decision, but some have expressed concerns over the process that has led the ISB to publish the exposure draft, particularly whether the proposal is based on a very strong presumption that ISB will finalize the insurance contract project very shortly. We also observed there have been significant gap among board members as to whether going for the exposure draft is appropriate. We understand and agree that accounting standard on insurance contract are much needed. At the same time, however, we still think that it would be important for the ISB to carefully consider whether there have been significant changes from the previous consultation that would warrant another public consultation. In our view, the proposal to defer the effective date of IFRS 9 should not preempt the ISB's decision as to whether re-exposure of the insurance contract standard is necessary. Given that there have been a number of changes from the proposal in the 2013 exposure draft, many Japanese constituents believe it is at least necessary for the ISB to ensure whether the revised model is sufficiently operational. Many also believe that it would be necessary for the ISB to carefully consider whether another public consultation is warranted.
So yeah. If I
well, let me say a couple of words about that, Yukio. Of course, we will consider that very, very carefully. But we have to take into account the history of this whole project and the credibility of the whole project, which is that we have been working on this for, I think, 15 years.
16.
We have exposed three times a discussion paper plus two exposure drafts. There are not many issues that people have not looked at. And of course, there will still remain issues that people are not happy with, but this project has been discussed through and through. And there is a great urgency for us to finish. I mean, I often make the comparison to the Basel Committee. If the Basel Committee had to work along our procedures, we would still not have stricter capital requirements for the banks. And we are living in a period of low interest rate environment, which is extremely challenging for the insurance industry, and current accounting does not show it. Simply does not show it in many parts of the world, with some exceptions. So this is extremely urgent. The Financial Stability Board last week urged us to finish as soon as possible. IFREC has urgently finish as soon as possible. Also with a view on the situation with IFRS 9 and IFRS 4. So it would indeed have to have extraordinary factors that would make us decide for another exposure. That, of course, you know, there's a big role here for our trustees, so I cannot preempt that discussion. But this is the background as I see it.
Thank you, Hans. I understand the necessity of the urgency because of the request of the Financial Stability Board and the other, you know, the international organization. But from my perspective, you know, the due process is more important than the urgency. Other accounting standards say that. So just therefore, I just comment.
So the staff will, as we do for all projects, review the due process steps undertaken on the project and look at the exposure criteria in our due process handbook at a time when the deliberations are largely complete and we have the full set of standards. And in that, we'll be paying particular attention to what warrants re-exposure and what doesn't. I do note that the due process handbook does comment specifically that the fact that there are changes to what was proposed does not in itself mean that there should be re-exposure, and that we need to bear in mind things like how much consultation was done and so on and so forth. I would say that the project has done a lot of outreach. We've been consulting with many, many people over a large number of years. I think we feel we've got a good understanding at board and staff level, at all levels within the organisation, about where people have different views and why they have those different views. That isn't to say we think that we've convinced everyone. I don't think we ever will, but I think we do have a good understanding of what people think.
Chris?
Andrew, just a point of clarification. Our preparers are not particularly interested in either of those two options. So the one they're more concerned about is that they get a second go at IFRS 9 in terms of the business model assessment. So we just wanted to confirm that that was still on the table.
That's been brought back to the board at some stage, hopefully this month, to go through.
Do you think that will go out with that ED?
No, because that is a requirement to do with the new forthcoming insurance standard. It is a transition relief on adopting the new insurance contract standard.
So the ED were trying to publish for the IFRS 9, IFRS 4, new insurance contract standard effective dates is of amendments to IFRS 4. IFRS 4 will disappear when the new insurance contract standard comes into place. The transition relief is for companies who have already applied IFRS 9 and are now going to apply the new insurance contract standard, so it becomes part of the transition to the new insurance contract standard. What we will have is, hopefully at the end of this month, decisions on that transition, tentative decisions on the transition relief, which would then feed into the drafting process for the new insurance contract standard. And given the timetable Hans has outlined, we would hopefully have a published insurance contract standard by the time entities actually need to implement IFRS 9 as well.
You might just want to put something in the ED that you're putting there on these two options to flag how all that fits together.
Yes, we're trying to explain how we see all of these options, including what we're expecting in a new standard to impact in the basis.
Linda?
So I want to emphasize that I'm responding early days to my understanding and have had no ability really to consult broadly. I'd like to speak from a bigger basis of data usually. So the way I think about this is the first thing I think about things is the usefulness of the information that's going to result as, you know, in terms of the change. So those using the financial statements. And I think about that from a comparability perspective. And so I think I have no choice but to react to that in terms of the impact on Canada, where in Canada we have banks who have captive insurance subsidiaries, and similarly we have insurers with captive banking subsidiaries, and the way that's going to play out in Canada. So as I understand the proposals, the banks would not qualify for the deferral. The insurers would. the insurers then, for their bank captive banking subsidiaries, would be deferring IFRS 9. And so I think what we're, where we are going to end up is being confronted with the notion of, you know, similar activities being accounted for differently, not a level playing field, and going into the arena of past comparability and into business conditions and competitive issues. Not sure.
I think
not sure. Just.
But to be clear, in any separate financial statements, those banking subsidiaries of insurance companies prepared, that have to apply IFRS 9. They apply IAS 39 in the consolidated accounts, but any separate accounts would be IFRS 9.
Assuming they're required to apply IFRS, yes, at the separate,
yeah,
account level.
But the other thing I would observe is that we are setting a predominant activity hurdle to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So to the extent that these banking subsidiaries become, stop that being a predominant insurer, then they may not qualify.
No, I understand that, but given the playing field, like, we have big, great big banks, but then we drop off dramatically, and some of those captive insurance banking operations are very similar to what we call Schedule B banks in Canada. So, all said, I understand what you're trying to achieve. Very sympathetic that there is no easy solution here. But I think that for us, we are going to have to go back very clearly and consult. There's some local regulatory things that are happening as well that is not your problem and that we need to work through. But I think that I would support getting this out as quickly as you can, and I would be fully supportive of the reduced comment period so that we can all get the information back to you as quickly as you can, because I think this is potentially a very serious thing that we are all going to have to consider.
I understand that, and I've already heard that from some people, but I think it would be helpful, we'll try and emphasize it in the basis to the document. It was a very close run thing whether we could get the board to agree to any deferral at all, and I think a number of us accepted it on the basis that we were imagining it would apply to a very narrow population of entities, and we saw it very much as being in combination with the overlay. So I think it, obviously we want to hear back for what everybody thinks about how the cut has worked, but I'm just sort of flagging that I think it'll be difficult for the board to accept a broader application of deferral, and I think for many board members, applying it at a below the reporting entity level and having this sort of mixture of IAS 39 and IFRS 9 and the consolidated financial statements was something that we were very hesitant about and sort of supported by a lot of the user feedback that we got back. So I would encourage people to think about the combination of the overlay and the deferral, because that's very much how we've approached it, although I completely understand that.
I think, Linda, there's an additional point that also comes in there, is that you use the term there, similar activities accounted for in a similar manner, which I think is one of the concerns we had here. The difficulty you've got is, if I take, for example, something like mortgage assets are similar assets no matter who holds them, but many insurers specifically hold mortgage assets in their insurance business, as part of their insurance business. So I think your concern about similar assets being accounted for similarly, no matter which approach or how you think about the deferral, is likely to come out. I think that's the cost of this approach.
Yeah, understood.
And of course, more comparability. It's an option. So more comparability can be reached by not applying the deferral.
Yep.
Françoise?
First of all, I wanted to say that we're getting prepared to provide input, so I think that the 60-day comment period is not a problem. The other thing I wanted to ask is just to make sure that default at the entity level is fully discussed in the basis for conclusions.
The basis of the conclusions, of course, will discuss why the board decided what it did and what considerations what factors it considered in arriving at its conclusions. And as that was in the board paper, it will, of course, be discussed.
Dean Chow.
Thank you. Two comments. One, first comment, in China, we have similar cases as Linda raised, that some insurance company, they are very big, but it was controlled by much more bigger bank. So the bank activities compared with insurance activities actually much higher than insurance activities. So in this case, in my understanding, that this insurance company subsidiary, you know, have to apply IFRS 9 timely. So our insurance companies has very big concern that, because it will be a very big burden for them to apply IFRS 9 ahead of insurance contract come out or become effective, because this insurance company will, if you just look at the insurance industry, it will be very, very big insurance company, but compared to the banking activities, maybe much smaller than. So this is the first point. They worry about the burden and the mismatch, something like that. And the second, that if a company has not subsidiary, it is an associate. But this associate is an insurance company. But this insurance company, because we have to use the equity method to account for the investment in this insurance company. This insurance activities may be very significant compared to other activities. So whether it will apply for deeper approach for this insurance company as an associate?
I don't think so, because it won't be part of the test, which is the liability-based test. So it could apply the overlay approach.
Yeah, if simply just based on, you know, insurance company's liability compared to the total, you know, investor's liability, but it still meets the predominant, you know, criteria. So whether?
So the decision the board took was that it is predominant, but the predominant is anchored in the size of the liability. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you're not reporting the liability on balance sheet means that it's not a relevant consideration. So you
insurance liabilities won't roll up into the consolidated financials, which is how the test works, or is proposed.
So in that circumstance, you'd be able to use the overlay approach. The overlay approach allows you to remove the volatility from the income statement, because in a equity type approach, it's predominantly the income statement effect that you're dealing with. I think your problem is resolved in any case.
Another thing is that if associates not, it's insurance activity not account for significantly compared to other activities, so that means at the equity method, you know, this insurance company has to, you know, make adjustments to meet the, you know, parent or consultant financial statement as well. So it still costs too much, you know, for those companies, yeah.
Two points. First of all, the noise that you're talking about, Linda, should only last 3 years based on a 2021 effective date. And the board also discussed a time cap on these options, so it should be only 3 years. And I know Hans hasn't given up on the possibility of a 2020 effective date, so it possibly could be 2 years of noise. That's point one. And the second point is that, you know, we have had examples in history of where companies have had to effectively suck up accounting noise which doesn't reflect economics. And a big one in the banking world was when IAS 39 came in, some banks said the world would end because you can't get hedge accounting for credit default swaps. But what did they do? They disclosed what that position, what was going on. We've got this volatility, but dear reader, please understand that this does not represent economic volatility, it's accounting noise. And, you know, in our disclosure initiative, all this thing about communication and writing down what your story is exactly what we're about. So we're encouraging people to give those disclosures which explain what's going on, and I think that's what we're looking at, a short-term period when some preparers will perhaps have to explain some volatility which is not economic volatility.
I think they don't even have to suck up the volatility, to use your technical term, because they could use the overlay.
They could use the overlay.
If they've got the overlay approach. I think it's also worth us underlining that we did extensive user outreach on this, and one of the common themes there is that they are users are faced with such different accounting for insurance contracts all over the place that they are making almost annual adjustments as people change their reported
operating type earnings. They've got a lot of volatility there already because of deficiencies in existing accounting of our insurance contracts. And to some extent, because this is at least moving in the right direction of a new standard for financial instruments and a new standard for insurance contracts, some of them at least are sanguine about the temporary disruption that this is going to cause.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so now for the easy bit. Agenda paper 7 is the normal project update and the agenda planning. I think probably most people have had enough updates on ISB projects this week, but the project update is in Appendix A. I haven't included in this paper the normal summary of tentative decisions because when I wrote this paper, we'd only had one ISB board meeting, which had been pretty close to the last ASAF meeting. So I will do something for the December meeting. Then in Appendix B is the proposed agenda topics for the December and April meetings. I just wonder if members have any comments on the proposed agenda topics or if there are any items they feel they would like to add to those proposed agendas.
Alexander is going to add some inflation to the agenda.
how could you guess?
So
my suggestion would be, we, given the timing of that paper, that we brought it back. I don't think it will be ready for December, but it would be ready for the April meeting.
Yes, yes, I agree. So there is some new improvements.
So we're going to bring back the paper that came to the ASAF before, that will be developed a bit further by the members of GLAS, and we'll bring that back to the April meeting.
Thank you.
As we indicated in the conceptual framework session yesterday, we are considering if we can make a contribution to the discussion about discussion about the recognition criteria. Thus, we would like to propose having a conceptual framework discussion during the December ASAF meeting.
Okay. Chris?
We're doing a joint project with Korea, which is looking at cultural differences and understanding of terminology in IFRS standards. If you're interested, I think we would be able to present some of the findings at December.
Oh, that's interesting. In Korean?
We're supposed to be doing it at the AOSSG meeting.
Okay, any other comments? No? Then I think we have come to the end, but not before we bid farewell to Clement and Christina and thank them for their efforts and participation in these meetings. And farewell, knowing that we will see each other very soon again. Thank you very much.
Taking this opportunity, I also like to say a few words about, you know, the experience I've had on ASAP. It's been a wonderful journey, and I enjoy every minute of it. And I didn't know that I'm going to say this, you know, on the last meeting, but as a matter of fact, I'm going to miss you guys, you know, and the agenda.
Okay, we'll keep you posted. All right. Have a good weekend.